So back in August, we ran a piece called In Carmen's Hands. It's the story of how one woman who lives on the border of Colombia and Ecuador has managed to feed and house more than 10,000 migrants from Venezuela.
Muy buenas noches. Soy Carmen Carcelén del Juncal.
Carmen Carcelén runs her shelter with volunteers, donations from the local community, and the money she makes from transporting produce to a local market. After the program aired, many of you emailed us saying, we want to help. Well, here's an update, and we just want to say, wow. Thank you so much. With your support, the campaign for Carmen's Casa de Paz has so far raised more than $1,700. That might not sound like a lot of money, but it's enough for Carmen to build a new playroom, an education center for children also making the long trek from Venezuela.
El dinero que será recolectado y Dios les pague.
And for a few necessities like teachers, water bills, and food. We cover a lot of tough subjects on the program, some that feel hopeless or endless, or that frankly just make you frustrated. Well, we feel that way too. But stories like Carmen's and the support we receive from you all, well, that reminds us that we can do something. People still want to make a difference. So thank you again for your generosity. Carmen's GoFundMe campaign will remain open through the end of the year. And if you'd like to donate, you can find a link on our homepage or send us an email at feedback@worldaffairs.org.
Muchas gracias nuevamente. De verdad, un abrazo de parte de la familia García Carcelén. Muchas gracias.
You're listening to World Affairs. I'm Teresa Cotsarillas. Kimberly Brown is a freelance journalist based in Ecuador. Most of the stories she covers are about human rights. So a few years ago, she followed up on a tip about a woman with an unusual number of house guests.
Why don't we just kind of start at the beginning here? When did you meet Carmen Carcelén?
So I first met Carmen in 2019 when I went to her house with a photographer, specifically because we had heard this story that she turned her home into this temporary shelter for Venezuelan migrants. So Carmen lives in the small town of Juncal, which has a population of about 2,000 people. And the town lies right along the Pan-American Highway, about 54 miles from Ecuador's main border crossing with Colombia. And so anyone who enters the country goes by her house. And this is why it became an opportune place to have a shelter for migrants, as so many were passing through her village. So her house itself is this modest three-story cement home, but the third story is this kind of this like open patio area where they constructed a couple extra rooms. And so when we got there, there were people constantly coming in and out. We actually also spend the night at her house too. And the night that we stayed there, there were about 100 other Venezuelans who were also staying the night. Carmen herself is this like really energetic 50-year-old woman who loves having people around. She loves having her house full. And so this became kind of a natural role for her to be, quote unquote, running this shelter, even though it was her home. And at night, when we were all eating our evening meal, she gets up in this really charismatic way and starts explaining the house rules to people.
La regla de esta casa. Primero, buenas noches, señores. Hay que saludar. Buenas noches.
You know, be respectful to everybody, wash your plates, say hello when you walk through the door. But most importantly, things like weapons aren't allowed. If you have any kind of knives, like pocket knives, leave them at the door. No drugs or alcohol. And if any of these are found, then you'll be quickly escorted out of town. So she also had this really stern side to her, which is probably necessary. As of 2017, and to the point where when we went to visit her, she had about 8,500 Venezuelans who had passed through her home at that point. And they come through and they spend the night. She makes sure that the men have one room to sleep and the women were divided into two other smaller rooms. And everyone has their own mattress. They have a few meals and then they leave the next day.
That is remarkable. I'd love to take a step back here and talk about how Carmen found herself in the middle of this massive and historic migration crisis. How did this crisis start? Where is it coming from?
Well, I think the economic and political situation in Venezuela is complicated, you know, but usually when you talk to people about why they left, it's because of the economy. You know, Venezuela is rich in oil. It has been for a long time.
Venezuela tiene inmensos recursos energéticos, por ejemplo.
Un país del Caribe o latinoamericano debería importarle combustible a Europa.
So during the commodities boom, the Chavez government benefited greatly from the high prices of oil.
Our homeland will be free or it's
free. We'll fly.
We will be free or die. Live free or die.
But then when that dropped in 2014, it drastically affected the economy. So for years now, Venezuela has had some of the highest inflation rates in the world, which has rendered their currency basically useless. There are constant shortages of gasoline or access to water in some cases. There are power outages. And even people with full-time jobs have a hard time affording high prices of food and other necessities. And so this obviously generates a crisis and people leave en masse to look for opportunities elsewhere.
5.6 million Venezuelans have fled their nation since 2014, and the diaspora has sent shockwaves throughout Latin America. Ecuador doesn't even share a border with Venezuela, but hundreds of thousands of migrants have made their way to the country anyway. It's 1,000 miles from Caracas to the Ecuadorian border, and many migrants make that journey on foot.
I mean, walking along the side of the road, it makes you really vulnerable, right? I think a lot of Venezuelans find each other along the way and try to stay in larger groups, specifically for a kind of security and numbers factor. But even that doesn't, it's not guaranteed, right? And so they become targets for human traffickers, for theft, for anyone just wanting to take advantage. And, you know, people who can come to your rescue are not close by. But the best of times in Ecuador, there were about 2,000 to 3,000 people crossing the border each day. And of course, this has changed during the pandemic, but these were the statistics in 2019.
Could you walk us through how Ecuador fits into this? I mean, Ecuador is not a big country. Not a lot of people outside of Latin America follow the politics there. And I'm really curious how they fit into this crisis and how they're responding to it as a country.
Yeah, so Ecuador has a pretty unique history when it comes to immigration. At one point, it used to be considered one of the largest receivers of refugees and asylum seekers in the region. And the main reason for that was its open border policies. You know, it didn't require a visa for anyone to enter, which was unique in the region. The largest refugee population here has always been Colombians. But you had people seeking asylum from all over the world, from like Iraq and Syria. And they stayed here to find a new life. A lot of them used Ecuador as kind of a transit point to migrate to other countries, specifically to go on foot to the U.S., which is a major trek, but a lot of people did that.
With an immigration history like that, you'd think Ecuador, of all places, would know how to handle an influx of Venezuelan migrants. But Kimberly says the country has not been handling this well.
The former government of Lenin Moreno, who just left office in May, over the past 4 years, he's put a number of restrictions, basically, for them to get into the country. At one point in 2019, he tried to oblige all migrants trying to enter the country that they need to have a criminal record check with them in order to enter. That was canceled after so many human rights groups complained and put pressure on them to change that ruling. But then a few months later, he announced really firm visa requirements, saying all migrants trying to get through needed to have a visa they could only get at a Venezuelan embassy outside of Ecuador. And of course, this costs a small fee that most Venezuelans can't afford. It involves needing a passport and a whole lot of bureaucratic papers that are really hard to get, considering the state of Venezuela right now. And so you have these series of things that the government did not do right, I would think, from a human rights perspective.
And then, caught in the middle of all of this, there's Carmen. Her home is right by the highway. The migrants are walking right past her house. And her government isn't doing much to help. pivoting back to Carmen for a second, I mean, I'm curious how this shelter started. Like, how did she end up stepping up and how did she start doing this?
Well, it's funny. The way Carmen tells it is that she was driving down the highway one night with her husband, and they saw a group of about 11 people walking along the side of the road, and one person falls over. So they pulled over specifically with the intention to say, like, hey, be careful. Like, what you're doing is really dangerous. You shouldn't be just falling on the side of the highways like that. And that's when they realized that they were a group of Venezuelans who had been migrating, and the person fell over because they were exhausted. And so Carmen said, listen, you have two options here. You could continue your journey wherever you're going, or you could go to that house over there. And she points to this house and said, like, the person there will give you food and shelter. And then they drove off. So a little while later, the same group of migrants went and knocked on this door, and Carmen answers. So she had just redirected them to her house. And they stayed the night. She gave them food and shelter, and they took off the next day. And she said from there, it just kind of developed naturally.
I'm really curious about some of the logistics here. How does Carmen afford to feed and house all these people?
Yeah, it's not easy. And Carmen will be the first to tell you that she gets donations of things, like objects, from some international NGOs. I know she's gotten donations of like portable showers and portable toilets and some dishes and things to kind of help out with the process. But other than that, what she really needs, she says, is money and food. And these are the things that she lacks. She's racking up large bills for electricity and for water, for, of course, for thousands of people using these services in her house and for the food itself. But she gets by mainly from her modest job of transporting fruit and vegetables and other products to the local market in the local city. And she does this about four times a week, in addition to caring for people in her home, which, of course, she also does with some volunteers from the town as well.
So just to be clear, the Ecuadorian government doesn't help her with this at all?
No, no.
When you were at Carmen's shelter, I'm curious if you talked to any migrants and what they had to say about their experience. Did they share any stories with you?
Yeah, I spoke to quite a few people. I think that the first person who comes to mind is this man named Edgar and his wife, Yennefer. And they come to mind because they were just so happy. Like, they were extremely good-natured people, and they were so happy to be in Carmen's house. I think Edgar told me, you know, we thought we'd be sleeping out on the street tonight before we found Carmen's house. Edgar and Yennefer, they're from San Antonio del Táchira, which is a town in Venezuela on the border with Colombia. And they had walked almost the entire way to Carmen's, with a few stops where they managed to hitchhike. And by the time they reached Carmen's house, they had been on the road for 20 days. And this was the first time in 6 days that they had been in any kind of enclosed space with a roof over their head. And the first time since they had left Venezuela that they were sleeping on a bed. So they were extremely happy that night.
Kimberly visited Carmen's shelter back in 2019. And by 2020, well, the situation for Venezuelan migrants had gotten a lot worse.
During the pandemic, I think the Venezuelan migrants became another population that was totally ignored. I mean, Ecuador is also suffering and has been suffering a huge economic crisis since the pandemic began, with unemployment and poverty levels rising for its own populations. And so I don't think the government was really in a position to go out of its way to help migrants and refugees when so many people in the country here are also suffering.
How has the pandemic impacted Carmen and her shelter? I can't imagine the stress that this put her under.
Well, from the beginning of the pandemic, the Ecuadorian government, it actually responded really quickly and implemented a national state of emergency from the beginning, curfew across the country, and ordered people to stay inside their homes. And so the government cracked down hard. And in that, they also closed the borders right away. This was back in March in 2020. And they also forced Carmen to close her doors, saying that letting a bunch of people in was a biosecurity hazard. And so she did, out of obligation. But she wasn't happy about it.
What does that mean happened to the migrants? I mean, I can imagine that they kept coming, right? Like, what if they didn't have any shelter in this incredibly dangerous time, what happened?
Yeah, so even though the borders were closed, and they actually remain closed today, so that's over a year now. I mean, it's a very fluid border. It's not lined by walls or fences. It's pretty easy to walk through. So people kept coming.
2 kilometers north is the border between Ecuador and Colombia. 600 kilometers of river,
sides,
dense Amazonian jungle. Ecuador says controlling the area is impossible.
I spoke to Carmen a couple of weeks ago, and she said that she wasn't happy that she had to close her house, specifically because she would go outside and she would still see people who needed help. There are people who were hungry, who needed to rest, who needed shelter, because it's cold at night or it's way too sunny during the day. And so she said for her, it was a decisive moment. It was, you know, she had to go out and help these people. So she began by bringing food out to people who needed it and making sure that no one was going hungry. And then she managed to convince the local church to let people into the church and to stay the night. And then from there, she would cook the meals in her house and bring the meals over to the church. And so while she was happy she was able to help in some way, this also created extra work for her because she had to bring the food over there and bring the dishes back to her house and everything. But slowly, little by little, she started letting people come to her house at night and kind of started sneaking people in. And she said she had to sneak people in because neighbors would complain. But eventually she just started letting people in on her own and the authorities stopped bothering her and it reopened normally. And I think it was also able to do that because the number of people coming through, it didn't disappear, but it shrank significantly. So she still receives about 30 to 50 people a day. And so there's still a constant flow of traffic, but the numbers have reduced significantly.
So where do things stand now? I mean, is Carmen optimistic? How does she view her own situation?
So her house is now open as a fully functioning, I guess, shelter like it had been before. Authorities have stopped bothering her to close it. I think she has a little bit of authority in the town as well for that. But she is concerned that when the borders open again, that there will be a huge flux of people coming in again. And I think she's right. I think that will happen, even though closed borders can't keep people out. Open borders might invite people to come through again. And of course, the crisis in Venezuela isn't stopping anytime soon. And so I think there's people still feel a need to have to leave. And so I think Carmen is still, in a way, optimistic that she will get more support. I think she really wants more help from the government or from organizations to be able to fund what she's doing, so that she can keep things going, because her main motivation is that people don't suffer on their journey. But the only thing that she can control of this dynamic is how she treats people coming through her town. And so she told me, you know, this is work. No one pays me for it. And there are very few people in the world who are crazy like I am, but I like it and I'm gonna keep doing it. And she was very firm about that.
Kimberly, thanks so much for talking with us.
No problem. My pleasure.
You've been listening to World Affairs, produced in partnership with KQED. That was Kimberly Brown. She's a freelance journalist based in Ecuador. If you want to read her article and see photos of Carmen Carcelén, please visit our website at worldaffairs.org. And if you want to make a donation to Carmen, please send us an email and we'll help make it happen. You can contact us at feedback@worldaffairs.org. World Affairs is funded by TPG, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and by listeners like you. Today's episode was produced by Matteo Schimpf and me, Teresa Kotsarilis. Elise Manoukian is our associate producer. We had production assistance from Ryan Housel. Tatum Sanderbeck manages our website. Our technical supervisor is Jim Bennett. Our executive producer is Joanne Jennings. And our CEO is Philip Yun. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Teresa Kotsarilis. Thanks for listening.